Good morning, Fairbanks. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. This is a pre-recorded show earlier this morning on Tuesday, so we're not going to be taking any phone calls, but I have Congressman Mr. Begich, Mr. Nick Begich III, NB3, in the studio with me. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, sir. How are you doing today?
It's a great August. I mean, it's a great August.
At least down in Anchorage, we had a lot of wet weather in July, it's gotten a lot better.
We were thinking that would happen during the fair, but it did not. So it was a great fair. I got to spend a little bit of time at yours and Senator Sullivan's booth. I came out of my political hiatus for a few hours. Now I'm back in it, but I'm interviewing you. How you been doing?
I'm doing well. It's great to be back in the state, and we've got some time here in August to travel the state and reconnect with folks, talk about some of the things that we've achieved, and then also learn from people what they'd like to see down in D.C., not just for the remainder of this Congress, but in the next.
You know, you were regarded as one of the most successful legislators in Congress, getting a lot of bills passed, but you were the most influential, if not accomplished, freshman legislator. What were some of the bills that you got through?
You know, there was so many bills. We passed a couple of what they call CRAs, or Congressional Review Act actions. And what's special about these in particular is that a Congressional Review Act action doesn't require 60 votes in the Senate to get through, right? You need 50 plus one on a CRA. It's what's called a privileged resolution. And what it does is it basically acts as a rebuke by Congress to an executive, right, in the presidential office. And so when Joe Biden came in the previous administration and locked up a lot of our state through regulatory action.
We all remember that executive order. Executive orders. We were two-thirds were at Alaska.
That's right. So there were 70 executive orders and actions, as Senator Sullivan has cataloged. And look, you know, we suffer in Alaska from this situation where one administration comes in, they're favorable to us. Another administration comes in, they're not favorable to us. And a CRA allows us to push back permanently on that pendulum. And so we were able to permanently, durably repeal the regulations in so many parts of Alaska that were locking up our state that Joe Biden and his team had put into place through these CRAs. And so we did that for the North Slope, in NPRA and ANWR, and we also ran a CRA for the Dalton Highway Corridor. It was a revocation of the Central Yukon Resource Management Plan, which was a backdoor lockup for our pipeline corridor land transfer
and the Ambler District
mining road. So, you know, these are very low-key but relatively insidious ways that the left has come in to block our ability to access resources, and they're broadly supported by the environmental NGOs, or what we call ENGOs, from the lower 48. And so when we pass these, as these CRAs were moving through Congress, we encountered a great deal of resistance from folks in the lower 48, but we
good.
Were able to get the yes.
Like I care. I'll let you know when I give a poop. You heard that here on KFAR.
But I've been successful building good relationships with our key leadership in the House, and we only have, as people understand this well, we only have one member of the U.S. House. That's me. Mm-hmm. And I don't have 20 other legislators like California, New York, or Texas. And so we've got to build strong relationships so that people will prioritize our state in that body if we're going to get anything done. So we were able to move those things through. We've done a number of other things as well. For example, the military lands that we have up here in Alaska, we're coming up for lease renewal, and those lands are withdrawn from selection at BLM because they're there for military purposes. And so we have training lands in Alaska that are not available anywhere else in the United States, because we need, it turns out you need a lot of land in order to run certain kinds of tests and exercises, joint exercises, whether those be joint among different branches of the military or with other nations. And Alaska has a unique capacity to hold those exercises and to do these kinds of events and training events. And so those were expiring. We renewed them for several decades. And so we won't have to deal with that as a potential issue going forward. That one really hadn't gotten a lot of press, but we were able to get that done. Look, we've gotten the landless legislation in Southeast Alaska. There were five Alaska Native tribes that had been left out of the land selection process in Southeast. And this is legislation that Don Young had worked on, and even Peltola had tried to pick up. It had been introduced in 11 Congresses, and just to level set, that means 22 years.
Yeah.
22 years.
Back in 2002, since then. Remember the Y2K bug thing? That long ago.
Long ago. They've been working on this, trying to get it through the House, and no one had successfully moved that bill through the House. I was able to get it through the House. Took a lot of work. We had to make a number of changes and really work on both the majority and the minority, but we were able to get it over to the Senate. And so, look, I think we're making historic progress on longstanding Alaska priorities. But the things that I'm most proud of were actually things that were incorporated into the budget reconciliation bill last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 13 bills that we passed out of the House, those were standalones. And they were predominantly focused on Alaska. Those came from me and my team. But the budget reconciliation bill, of course, that doesn't have my name on it, but it definitely has our stamp on it, because we unlocked 30 million acres for mandated oil and gas lease sales over the next 10 years as a part of that bill. And that's a huge, huge deal, because it's the NPRA and it's ANWR. We've been trying to open up these regions since statehood.
You know, I'm going to take a little divergence here. Your predecessor shut down the Fairbanks office. You opened it back up. And now you've gone one further. Your Alaska chief of staff is a Fairbanksan.
That is true. That is true. And so, she's doing a great job. Leslie Hadukovich is doing a great job for us. She is our state director.
Yeah.
State director. So you're 100% right. We definitely prioritize Fairbanks. I love the Golden Heart City, and I spend a lot of time up here when I'm back in state. But it's really great to have Leslie leading our efforts statewide from right here in Fairbanks.
Yeah. The Ambler Road, you know, everyone's talking about the gas line, and I look at the gas line, you know, I've been waiting for I was in Prudhoe Bay in 1977 when they turned it on, and they started laying us all off, and everyone's saying, don't worry, we'll be back in 6 months for the gas line. That was
a while ago.
40-some years ago?
I was born in 1977.
Yeah. So you're 50. Oh, sorry. Yeah, but you know, we're closer than ever for a gas line. But I always say Ambler Road has more economic value for continuing long-term job creation in the interior. Gas line is great, but Ambler Road.
Ambler Road is so important. And let's remember something. This gets lost in the conversation on Ambler Road. You know, the state, as many of us know, had the opportunity to select lands.
Yeah.
Right? And so the state wisely selected lands that were of particular value to current and future Alaskans.
Mineral rich
in this zone. This is state land. This is land that is owned by the state of Alaska, selected for the purpose of development. And it was the mineral potential of this region was known many, many, many decades ago.
Yeah.
Right? It's been known for probably 100 years at least that there's tremendous mineral potential in this area of Alaska. But the federal government has heretofore blocked our ability to access that land.
Our own land.
Our land. And our land access is guaranteed under ANILCA.
Our state compact, or our state...
That's right.
Constitution.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so opening up this resource, there's a huge benefit to Alaskans. not just in terms of jobs, certainly jobs, but there's also state revenue opportunities. And there's, importantly, downstream potential, right, where you say, okay, let's gather up these resources, but then let's add value to those resources. Before they leave Alaska, let's add value to those resources.
True. Fairmix, we are going to take a commercial break. Again, you're listening to a recording. We're not taking any phone calls. We'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Begich, the third NB3, Alaska's singular only congressman down in Washington. Now, you're working well with the structure down in Washington. In fact, you brought up the Speaker of the House here to Fairbanks. I mean, not to Fairbanks, but to Alaska. How was that?
Oh, it was absolutely incredible. And it is very unusual to be able to bring
the Speaker of the House.
The Speaker of the House. I mean, any member of leadership, but the Speaker of the House to Alaska. We actually went back and looked and tried to find different times that the Speaker has actually come to Alaska for the purpose of being in Alaska on a campaign event. And I don't think we've ever seen that, yeah. Not on the campaign side. A couple times speakers have come up just to visit various attributes of our state.
Yeah. Go fishing on the Kenai back when you could catch a king.
Right, right. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, my grandfather, of course, many know the story, brought up the majority leader of the House. And oddly enough, he was from Louisiana, as is our Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, also from Louisiana. But he had never been to Alaska before. And this was his first exposure to our state. His wife was able to join him. Two of his four kids were able to join him. And we made sure they had a good time, too, while we were doing our other business up here, campaigning and reaching out to folks. But, you know, he left, and he had such a great experience. He can't wait to come back to our state.
What's the compacture like working with him in regards to you're still dealing with Biden remnants?
Yeah, you know, we're looking for other opportunities to durably repeal. We mentioned the CRA earlier. We're looking for additional CRA opportunities with leadership to terminate that lockup legacy from Biden. But, you know, ultimately, if you're in an executive role, it's easy to say, I'm yes, I'm no. You know, it's black, it's white. When you're in a legislative role, it's really you're in the relationship business. You've got to build relationships.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. And especially when you're one out of 435. And so
you better be a special one.
it means a lot to bring the Speaker of the House, you know, the penultimate leader of the House, third in line to the presidency, by the way, to Alaska and really showcase, hey, we've had success. I've had success in building relationships with the people that set the agenda, right? That's a big part of it. You know that there's over 10,000 bills that have been filed in the last year and a half in the United States House of Representatives. 10,000 bills.
So that's an average of basically 300 per day.
I don't know if it's 300. It's a lot.
I don't know if think of 365 times 300. And you get about 10, you know, it's
a lot. It's a lot of bills.
Yeah,
people will ask me on the street and they'll say, hey, have you signed on to, and they give me a bill number, HR 3562, whatever that is. And they'll say, did you sign on to that bill? I don't.
Yeah, really?
How could I possibly know that? I mean, there's hundreds of pages every day that get filed as new legislation. So here's the point, right? You have all these bills. You have all these priorities, all these ideas, all these things that members of the House want to accomplish, and there's not enough time in a day to get all those things through committees and vetted and everything else. So if you want your legislation to move through, you've got to build relationships with people who set the agenda.
I was off a little bit. I just pulled out my HB calculator on my phone because that's what I do. And on a 365-day annual basis, 10,000 bills, you're averaging 27.4 bills per day, Monday through Sunday.
Some of these bills are one page. Some of them are over 100 pages.
Yeah.
A few of them reach into the 1,000-plus pages. It's remarkable how much material gets produced.
And how many are passed on to the Senate?
So I believe we've passed 700 or 800 bills to the Senate so far. So just envelope math is less than 10%.
Yeah. HP calculator math on my phone. Very good.
It works out to fewer than 2 bills per House member on average.
How many did you get last year? Over your first 2 years?
We've passed 13 so far over to the Senate.
So, you know, I wasn't good in statistics, but you're on the very high percentile. You're in the third tier of percentile. You're in the 5% range.
Let me put it this
effectiveness.
Way. We are leading the House in terms of bills passed from one member over to the House, or to the Senate, rather.
You know, you brought up the Speaker of the House, but for me, just as importantly, you brought up the Interior Secretary. He's the landlord.
He is. And Doug Burgum is a tremendous leader, as is Speaker Johnson. Mm-hmm. We came up, went above the Arctic Circle, went to Anaktuvuk Pass, actually, and I traveled with him there. We actually also went to the Mile Zero for the Ambler Mining Road.
Yeah.
And so we went to both locations. But the Anaktuvuk Pass trip was particularly impactful.
I could tell I had dinner with you guys, and you just got back, and you were choked up. I didn't hear any crying, but, I mean, you guys were choked up with emotion about what it takes for them to live up there.
Well, so to understand the announcement that was made there, you got to understand the history of the area. And the people of Anaktuvuk Pass were the last nomadic people in North America, okay? And they would travel the North Slope following the caribou herd because that was their primary source of sustenance. And so they were told, hey, you know, you can't just wander around. You've got to settle down. So, okay, well, this is not part of their history, but they agreed and they found a place where the caribou were common and they would always transit. And so they selected Anaktuvuk Pass. Well, in 1980, Jimmy Carter came in and passed ANILCA, and ANILCA created the gates of the Arctic National Park. Well, it turns out Anaktuvuk Pass sits right in the center of gates of the Arctic.
Yeah.
And the problem is this, you know, the regulations that came shortly thereafter prevented the people who lived in Anaktuvuk Pass from hunting caribou with an ATV. Okay. Now, if you've been up to Anaktuvuk Pass, and not many people have, but if you've been up there, you know,
you're not getting more than 5 miles out of town on your feet.
No, you're not.
That's why it's called Anaktuvuk Pass.
That's right. Yeah. And the land that surrounds them, it's sort of muskeg like, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of melted tundra in the summertime. You're not going
out
there.
You're not walking on it.
No. And so they've been restricted. They can watch the caribou go by, but they're very hard to access.
Hard to harvest.
And there's no road to Anaktuvuk Pass. So mm-hmm. anything that comes in, any of the food that comes in is being flown in, very expensive. And so these people have been fighting for years to be able to access that resource. Well, Doug Burgum made it a point not just to come to Alaska, but actually fly to Anaktuvuk Pass and announce that they are reversing that policy to allow people to hunt in their traditional...
With a four-wheeler.
Yeah.
So with wheeled access.
That's right. In their traditional lands, to be able to actually go out there and hunt. And you could see people were tearing up. They were choked up. There were celebrations. People were absolutely thrilled. I've never seen so much energy in a rural Alaska gym as I saw that day. It was like more than half the town showed up.
Yeah.
And they were absolutely thrilled. So, you know, look, this administration... You know, they care about Alaska. They want to put lands back in our hands. They want to give us our rights back. And they're doing that, whether it's, you know, a 300 or 400 person village in a remote part of Alaska, or whether it's right here in Fairbanks or in Anchorage, they're making sure that Alaska has a strong future again. Our future is tied to our ability to access and develop our resources. Period. Period. That's what Alaska is. That's what Alaska always will be. We're a resource state. And this administration gets it, and this Congress gets it, and my colleagues in the House get it.
Oh. You know, it's sad because the people in Washington, D.C. do not live in Alaska, yet you have a hard left lobby that tries to micromanage what we do and how we do things in our state, when actually the people of Alaska are probably the best managers of it because we live here and we want to take care of it.
That's right. And look, this goes to the base philosophy between the left and the right. The right believes you have agency,
yeah,
as an individual, that you have sovereignty as an individual, that you can chart your own course and make your own way. And the left says, no, the state will take care of you. The state will tell you what is good and what is not good. The state will give you your rights. But that was never the founder's intent.
Yeah.
Read the Constitution. Read the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident.
Yep.
Self-evident that we are endowed by our Creator, right, with certain inalienable rights. Those don't come from government. They come from God.
Very true. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. I have Nick Begich III in here with his Alaska Chief of Staff, Leslie Hajdukovic, on Overwatch of Us. And we'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back. Hopefully you're enjoying this wonderful Tuesday. This is a recorded segment here, so don't call in. I have NB3, Nick Begich III, in the office here. And you're going for your first reelection. Congratulations and condolences. You know,
yes,
you got a
yes.
Big state. Oh, so first of all, how many Alaska Airline miles did you get this last year?
You know what? I hit titanium halfway through the year this year.
Yeah.
And last year, I think I flew in total, if you go all airlines,
mm-hmm,
probably about 170,000 miles. With actual in the seat miles. And yeah, I mean, look, it comes with the job.
Yeah.
Sometimes, even on a 3-day weekend, you're back in state.
Yeah.
And it may take 15 hours door to door from the time you leave. You know, I live in an apartment.
Arrive.
I live in an apartment down there. So from my apartment there to my house in outside Anchorage, 15 hours. And same on the way going back, right? So
mm-hmm,
it's a day of travel here, a day of travel back. You might only be in state for 24 hours or 36 hours. And then you got to turn right around and go back and work I work a 14, 16 hour day. Sometimes even more.
You put in the time.
I mean, look, these bills are not going to pass themselves. You've got to get in there and work it. And I'm on 3 committees and 8 subcommittees. So
your predecessor was there more for the social aspects. You're not.
I am not. I'm definitely not. this is one of those things in life. You know, I don't need the job.
Yeah.
But the job needs to be done.
Yeah.
And there's been this, I call it the Alaska backlog, and it's many of the bills that we've talked about already today that have been sitting there in the queue that need to get done because people are waiting for these things to get done, and we need to clear it out.
And you have a great opportunity, you know, the past 2 years with the President, Congress, and the Senate to get a lot of things for Alaska accomplished, even though you've had opposition from a lot of extreme groups in the lower 48 trying to stop you.
Look, I tell people, the Democrats don't hate me because I'm not effective.
Yeah.
They hate me because I am effective.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, that's the bottom line. I mean, you know, they don't want me there because we are getting things done.
Yeah.
And
they really like Mary Pitola.
Well, yeah. I mean, look.
Sadly so.
I mean, the reality is the previous member did not pass any bills in her full term in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And remove Fairbanks as having an office here.
Removed the Fairbanks office. That's
yeah.
right, because my understanding, they overspent their budget and had to close it down, and so wasn't able to budget properly. So
great fiscal management there.
Terrible. And so, it's disappointing because here's what's interesting, okay? Even as a freshman, Don Young got three bills passed into law, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But he always got something done. Minority or majority, he found ways. He found ways. They may not have been big things when he was in the minority, but they were something. And Alaska's not used to having somebody in the House that doesn't accomplish anything.
Yeah.
And here's the problem. Anything that goes through the Senate, even if we have very productive senators, anything that goes through the Senate still has to go through the House. Senate can't make law by itself any more than the House can make law by itself.
Then it has to get by the president.
And then it has to get by the president. But the reality is you can't have half a team in D.C.
No.
You got to have a full team. That means you got to have somebody in the House that produces. And we did not have that in the previous Congress.
True. Very true. You know, and then she would vote against our interests.
Oh,
or run to the bathroom so she wouldn't be on record.
Well, and that's disappointing because, you know, when you're voting present on your own bill, that's, come on. And I said, look, we were very fortunate to have Don Young there for 49 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we all knew who Don Young was. And he didn't make any, you were never confused where Don Young stood on something, okay?
No, you were not.
And what you're referring to, the Alaska's Right to Produce Act.
Mm-hmm.
The Alaska's Right to Produce Act. It was actually carried by a member from Minnesota, Pete Stauber.
So embarrassing.
And he worked with Mary. Okay, fine. He worked with Mary. Mary co-sponsored the bill in committee. Then, and voted for it in committee. Then it gets to the House floor. It's out of committee. It's past committee. It's ready to go to the House floor and be sent to the Senate, right? And she has a change of heart of her own bill that she had worked on with this other member from Minnesota and sent a note, what's called a dear colleague letter, and a note out to all of her Democrat colleagues urging them to vote against the Alaska Right to Produce Act. So then it goes to the floor and now it's time to vote. And she doesn't vote for her bill. She doesn't actually vote against it like she told all of her colleagues.
Yeah.
She just votes present and calls it a day. That is not leadership. And if anyone out there thinks Don Young would have ever done a thing like that, then you didn't know Don Young.
You know, I tried to vote present one time on the city council as a city council member. And the city attorney said, oh, no. Oh, no, you're voting. You know, so it was I got that from Senator Murkowski. She voted, you know, present. Her and another person were both whatever. One was going to not be there or be there.
Oh, they'll pair off.
There's a certain process. So there would be nothing hurt. And I tried to vote present. The city attorney said, no, you're voting.
You're voting.
So I plugged my nose and I voted yes.
Well, and I'll look, this is what happens. You know, you're sent there to vote in part and, you know, let your position be counted and heard. And there's votes that are not easy to take. I promise you that. It happens every week. And you'll see a bill that's got 80 to 90% of all of good things, and there may be 10 or 20% of that bill that you really would prefer not to support.
Yeah.
And there are times that I'll say, look, that 10 or 20%, it's too much. I can't vote for it. And there's other times I say, you know what? The balance of the bill is good and moves the ball down the field. Yes, there's things I don't like, but on balance, I'll say yes. And so that's the gray zone where you've got to exercise judgment. Are you going to get it right every single time? No, we're human beings. But you try to weigh out, is this going to advance the cause? Is this going to improve life for people or on balance? Or is it going to be detrimental on balance? And, you know, that's a judgment call that you've got to make, but you got to make it.
Yeah.
You got to decide.
there is no sitting on the fence.
That's right.
You know, sometimes you have to make a hard call, and sometimes I had to plug my nose in public as I voted and would go aye instead of present.
Yep, exactly.
Because it moved it forward, but I was afraid of some of the ramifications it might have.
Yeah.
And that's what you deal with every day.
Yeah, that's just part of the job. I wish it were not like that. I would love to see single subject bills.
Yeah, you know? Good luck with that.
Yeah, it's we get these packages sometimes. A lot of most of mine were single subject. In fact, I think every single one of them was. But
maybe that's why you got 12 done.
Well, 13.
13, oh, sorry.
Who's counting? But yeah.
Your chief of staff will harangue me at our next break.
but no, I mean, I call it atomization.
Mm-hmm.
Take that bill and break it down into its subcomponent parts so you can get it through, right? Because when you get these big packages, you end up with things that people say, I can't vote for that because it has this thing in it that I don't like. But if you can break it down into its component pieces, then you can get those things actually finished. And where things jam up, my opinion, is when you get 100 bills rolled up into a package and try to send that through, those things get really tough to pass.
Yeah. I know it does. You know, looking at our infrastructure here, you know, we have a lot of monies that come in every year for a road, but we're also getting port construction now.
Yes.
Which is well needed. And I look at the Coast Guard and I look at, you know, I was in Kodiak a few years ago and, you know, Fairbanks is not near Kodiak.
Right.
But guess
that
what?
That's true. Yeah.
But guess what?
Yeah.
It's important for our civil and national defense.
It is. It is. We have more than half the nation's entire coastline is in Alaska.
I know.
And people joke about it, but the reality is we are close to Russia and we are closer to Japan. Right. We are also the northernmost, easternmost, and westernmost state all at the same time because we cross the international date line. We're big. And a lot of Alaskans, while we know that intellectually, we haven't had an opportunity as Alaskans to travel the entire state. It's impractical for most people to be able to go and see how vast Alaska truly is. But we need a well-funded Coast Guard and we need solid ports because at the end of the day, you know, this is how we get goods in.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we support our fishermen and our fishing fleet, and it's how we support the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
And so we are looking, my office, we look for opportunities to support port infrastructure. We want to make sure that that's well-funded and taken care of.
And the Port of Alaska, Port of Anchorage, whatever you want to call it, that's critical for Fairbanks.
It really is, because at the end of the day, we got to bring those goods have to come in. They have to come into the state. And look, we hear a lot about the Port of Alaska in Anchorage, but in the same context, we hear how dangerous it would be for the people of Alaska if that port were to fail. And there's truth in that.
Oh, yeah.
And so what I say is, hey, we need some diversity. We need some options, optionality around our port infrastructure. That means, yes, taking care of the Port of Alaska, but also
backup systems.
We need strong port capacity in Whittier. Mm-hmm. And Seward and Homer, right? We need to continue to invest in that port up in Nome for other purposes.
Yeah.
Port McKenzie.
Very important for Fairbanks.
Yes. You know, and that can be a port for bulk materials, both entering and leaving Alaska.
Yeah, the Susitna Basin.
That's
export.
Oh, tremendous opportunity.
There you go, right there.
Yeah. And so we can't just rely on the Port of Alaska and Anchorage. We have to be able to have additional failovers and port capacity that allows us to expand the resource development opportunities in Alaska.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to Congressman Nick Begich III on KFAR, and we'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back. I have in the studio with me Congressman Nick Begich III. And anyway, you're up here also for a specific reason.
Well, yeah.
Kinross. Of all, you know, a mining company.
Yeah, you know what? They're a great community partner.
Yeah.
They've done so much good in Fairbanks through Fort Knox, But they do other things besides create good-paying jobs, great wages, good opportunities. They give back a lot in the interior. And I'm up here because, in part, because Ken Ross is working with Trout Unlimited to help restore Cripple Creek. And Cripple Creek was impacted by some legacy mining.
Yeah, about 1920.
Yep, you know, over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And this is not an issue from Ken Ross.
No, not
Ken
a bit.
Ken Ross didn't do this. But Ken Ross said, you know what, let's help rehabilitate this creek and restore it as close as we can to its original state. And this is just one of the many ways that our partners in industry, not just Ken Ross, but our partners in industry, they really help the communities in and throughout Alaska. We saw this for many years with BP. We see it now with Hilcorp. We see it with ConocoPhillips. Does a great job, you know. So,
you know, the original was Usabelli, you know, in Healy.
Oh yeah,
their reclamation. I mean, they didn't have to do anything. State DNR property, and they set the standard.
They're fantastic partners. And you know, this is. We have a model, and I love talking about it in Washington, D.C. We have a model in Alaska that really should be replicated around the country in the way that we work with the industry leaders of our state to make the entire state better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a part of the sort of implicit social contract that exists in Alaska between those who utilize the resources that we have and the people who live here.
This is what gets me. What a combination of two groups, Ken Ross and Trout Unlimited.
Who would have ever imagined, right? Yeah. Yes. But it tells you that you can work in harmony.
Yeah.
These things are not mutually exclusive. And we're told so often from the lower 48 ENGOs, right, environmental NGOs, that, you can't have this if you have that. That's not true. That is not true.
This is living proof of it right here with you today out there to consecrate this.
That's right. It is. It is proof. And we know that's true in Alaska. And we will not accept this shopped narrative that gets sent up here from the lower 48 and international NGOs, by the way. That we can't do both at the same time, that we can't take care of our environment and utilize our resources at the same time.
Because no matter what happens at the end of it, we're going to be living in our environment still.
That's right. I tell people all the time, there's no one in America that cares more about Alaska than Alaskans do.
You know, and this is what I talk about, our resource development. In Alaska, we have the most harshest conditions, but we do it better than anyone in the world. We do it safer than anyone in the world. And we're under the most environmental strict regulation and oversight than anyone in the world.
That's right. And look, you know what? I get, and I'm one of these people in many respects. You want to take care of the environment.
Yeah.
You know, not just for today, but for the many generations to come. We want to take care of the environment. But let me tell you, if you care about the earth, if you care about the earth, okay, we're talking about the whole earth, a big globe, like zoom all the way out, and you're looking at the earth, care about the earth. When you're developing resources, wouldn't you want that work done where it's done best?
And this is what, as a Fairbankson, I want the world to understand. 3 weeks ago, I was dealing with particles from a volcano explosion in Russia. And 10 days ago, I was dealing with smoke coming in from Canada. And what do we have to do with that? Except
that's right.
Where we live, and we deal with it.
Yeah, and so we live on, we all live together on this globe floating in space, and the reality is we need to do it right. And when we don't do the work where it's done best, Alaska, okay, the work gets done, but it gets done in a place like China where if there are rules, they are not followed, okay?
Yeah.
And this is the equivalent of saying that you cleaned your house by throwing everything in your closet. You don't see the mess.
That was me as a teenager.
You know, it's like sweeping a pile of dirt under the rug and saying it's gone. out of sight, out of mind. And that's
that was me as a single male bachelor.
That's the mentality of so many on the left who, you know, as long as they don't see development,
yeah,
well, they can ignore it. But the truth of the matter is we do it right in Alaska. It needs to be done here because we have the best, because we have the best standards in the world.
And we not just have the best standards, we insist on the best standards of the world.
That's right.
You know, I love Fairbanks. I love Alaska. And as a congressman, you know, you must protect your largest state in the union with this a single person. It's just you.
That's right.
NB3, just you. Well, I'm glad you're there.
Well, thank you. And I'll tell you this. You know, I've got an opponent in my race who says he's not going to caucus with either side.
Oh, yeah.
Let me just put this this nonsense to bed.
Yeah.
Okay. If you don't caucus with anybody,
you're not getting anything done.
You think Mary didn't get anything done? Try this. That's even worse because you won't get committee assignments. Okay, so you'll have zero authority. You'll have no relationships. You'll be read into nothing because the caucuses tell you what's going on. This guy's good. If he were to get there, he'd be a total island. It would be the worst possible thing that you could do for Alaska. It'd be worse than electing a Democrat.
He's lying. I'll say it. He's lying. He's giving purposeful misinformation.
Well, I'll tell you what. He's either saying he's going to get nothing done or he's lying. And if he's lying, that's a bad thing too.
Yeah. Who's funding him?
You know what? It's a lot of out-of-state money.
Yeah.
That's why I asked the question. Yeah, nearly $3 million, has come in from outside Alaska, and it's hard left groups and the same groups that gave us ranked choice voting.
Yeah, I was just going to say, remember that ranked choice voting to stop the dark money that comes in? The floodgate opened.
It's the same people. You can see it. It's FEC data. It's publicly available for anybody. The 1630 Fund, Arabella Advisors Network, it's the same thing. It's a hard left, dark money operation. And what they did is they chased the Democrat out, and they leave a so-called independent.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, if anyone's curious how independent my opponent is, well, he donated to AOC. And he donated to Bernie Sanders, and he donated to Kamala Harris. So if that feels independent to you, I guess he's independent, but he's not. So the reality is
that's I hate to interrupt, but that's effing scary.
It's very concerning.
I can't say those F words on the air, but I can say effing scary.
Yeah, it's very, very concerning because look,
concerning is a nice political way.
There's Democrats and then there's socialists.
Yeah.
Okay. There's Democrats and then there's socialists. And those are socialists.
I'm sort of missing the Democratic Party all of a sudden.
Now they're just about gone. I mean, you're starting to see, you know, even the diehard old school Democrats trying to get away from these socialists, and it's nuts. Now, you've got people that are saying, look, if socialists take over the Democrat Party, they're leaving the Democrat Party.
But I was just reading where Washington D.C., where you spend a lot of time, it's a lot safer now.
It is a lot. I'll tell you what, it is. It is. It's very safe and relative to what it was when I got there.
Yeah.
And when the National Guard was deployed in our nation's capital, crime dropped substantially, almost immediately.
Even the mayor liked it. The mayor of Washington, D.C., even she's, thank God.
Well, we're cleaning up the Capitol. Look, this is our nation's capital.
Yeah.
It should be safe.
Yeah.
It should look good. This is how we feature the United States to the rest of the world and to the people of our country. And look, we should be proud of Washington, D.C.
You know, if you've never traveled to Washington, D.C., I was so fortunate I did, and I met you there. But the monuments that are there, just shows the history of what we've been through. And my favorite monument was the Civil War Cavalry Horseman Monument.
Mm-hmm.
Just striking.
Yeah,
and you don't know whether it was Union or Confederate. It looks Union, but it's just such a strikingly beautiful historical monument, and the whole area was safe and clean.
You know, and this was an area that had been dilapidated and allowed to just basically fall into disrepair.
Yeah,
we have a number of fountains mm-hmm. around the Capitol that had not been running for years. I'm talking decade plus, maybe two decades. And those have been restored and they're running. And people, look, D.C. voted for Kamala Harris by something like 90%.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the it's the most blue district in the America, world. Right? And even the residents there are going, hey, this is kind of nice. It's kind of nice to be able to know that you can go to the park and sit down and not watch your back and worry about getting robbed or murdered and enjoy this investment that was made many years prior into beautification.
Yeah.
Come on.
Congressman, we have about 2 minutes left. Thank you very much for being available to come in here. And hopefully under the watch of Ms. Hajdukovic, you'll come back.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was, acceptable interview here. Well, you got 2 minutes to wrap her up.
Yeah, I love coming to Fairbanks, and I love coming to Problem Corner because we get to talk about things that, you're not going to necessarily read about in a local newspaper. And at the end of the day, thankfully, we have mechanisms today with the internet and some social media to be able to access actual information. But it's always a pleasure to talk to your listeners. It's a pleasure to be back in the state and meeting with people and hearing what's working and what we'd like to continue to see change and improve, because the best ideas come from the public.
Yeah,
they don't come from me or my team sitting in some room trying to dream up the next big idea. It usually comes from somebody out there who's encountering a challenge and says, if we could only get rid of this problem or this law or add this law, things would change. And that's the genesis of so many great pieces of legislation that we will pick up. And so if you've got ideas on how things can be improved, let us know. Reach out to our office. We want to hear from you, and maybe we can work together and get something done that's durable.
Congressman, thank you very much for being on the show. Greatly appreciate it. Fairbanks, you have a great day, and I will see you on Friday.